Hello and welcome back to the Smashy Business Show. I am Farah Bashir.
And this is Richard Fitzgerald.
On a Friday morning. Today is Friday, you guys.
Friday, 12th of July, 2024. How's it going, Farah?
Well, I'm excited. For July is one of my favorite months of the year.
Great. Yeah, we're halfway through it. And what are the stories
How's
today?
How's it going for you?
Oh, good. Yeah, alhamdulillah. Okay. What are we talking about?
For today, we are going to talk about how Riyadh is building world's tallest sports tower and Swvl strikes gold by $6.3 million contract with Etisalat in Egypt. And as well, of course, UAE ranks amongst the top five fastest growing emerging economies in 2024, which are all exciting, I must say. And let's jump to our
Basically, we talk about all these business stories in mm-hmm. the region, but actually navigating the region is really challenging. One of the things I was thinking about this morning is our Qatar business and our office and the different, just the different business setup requirements in every country. And Saudi, and you know, we've got offices now in five different cities, and you know, we have presence in 11 or 22. MENA countries, and it's not easy. It's not easy to understand the region from a business point of view, from a consumer point of view, but also operationally, it's quite challenging. And I just think of the mindset of the, you know, the headspace of the listeners, of people navigating business and reading business stories. And you know, we have three stories today: one from Riyadh, one from Abu Dhabi, and Cairo. You know, Swvl. Swvl actually on the DFM as well, and then UAE. So there's lots of mix of business stories. There's lots of mix in the region. Not everyone in Dubai only looks at the region. A lot of people in Dubai also use Dubai as a global hub. A lot of people look to the global south, to Asia. A lot of people based out of Dubai but tackle the US market are you know, with different types of SaaS companies, different types of companies. But the region itself is quite it's quite nuanced, and it's also it's not one continent per se. It's actually across two continents: the African continent, the Asian continent. So it's not easy. The maps and the logistics and the operation and the headspace is not easy, is it?
It's not. It really is not. However, I think honestly, like for Dubai, people who invest and have their companies' developments begin here. It's because I would say with the fact that it's a tax-free company, country, it just like makes it all easier.
You mean VAT? Well, you mean PAYE, what do they call that? Income tax is tax-free, but of course it's not tax-free for VAT or for corporate tax, but it is competitive, and I think that's an interesting point. The VAT here is less than Saudi. It's 5% versus 15%, and the corporate tax rate, so this is the first full financial year, depending on when your FY runs from, but you know, January to December is pretty much the first full year, and a lot of companies are looking at their corporate tax now. The UAE is 9%, Saudi mm-hmm. is 20% if you're a ministry, if you're a Saudi, if you're a non-Saudi company. Qatar is 10%, and then you know, wider in the region, Egypt is 22%, Pakistan is 20%. So it, you know, the corporate tax setup is there, but yeah. Absolutely. From an income tax or from an employee point of view, there isn't any at the moment.
But you have, like, for example, like you are a businessman, you run Augustus Media and live in Dubai, here in Dubai and in the country. How would you say, how would you compare it to having the business done in Egypt and in Qatar and in Saudi?
Yeah, I love these type of questions, Farah, but I think it's, first of all, you can't think about this without knowing what your business is, and getting any business off the ground, selling one item of anything is hard, right? Sure. So if you have product market fit, you know, that's a phrase that can be for a restaurant, that can be for anything, it can be for an automotive, it can be a SaaS product, it can be a salon, it can be anything. It doesn't necessarily mean that if you opened in another city, even if the economy is good, even if the ease of getting up licenses, it doesn't mean that you're going to find product market fit. Why? Because there might be 100 more pharmacies already on the street in Beirut.
True.
Versus none in Neom, right?
Yes.
So, but there might be no people in Neom. right? And there might be 4 or 5 million sick old people in Lebanon or wherever,
100%,
right?
100%, yes.
So it's all these different things. I think the fundamentals of business are just there, right? So they need you need more pharmacies. You might need, you know, so all these different things are there. So I think, you know, when people say the ease of doing business and things like that, it's almost like it's almost preluded to if you're able to get a license, if you can get a bank account, if you can hire talent, it's going to be easy to do business. That's not the case. That's not the case because what, your idea might not work in different countries and different markets. You know, you and I were talking this week about real estate, and I was out for lunch on Sunday, and it reminded me of we're just so in tune with the conversation we're talking about building houses, and we're just so in tune now. We've been sort of almost steered towards a real estate environment here of. You know, and Waleed Shahabi talked about this, the Keeper CEO and founder. He said that the property developer ecosystem and construction and, you know, the whole real estate market here is different than elsewhere. And he compared Saudi, but even further afield, it's even different again. Why? If I want to own a villa, I don't really get a field in the countryside and approach someone to and build my house myself. But that's what happens in many other countries around the world. It doesn't really happen here, right? If you get a plot, you become a developer. You can be a master developer or you can just be a developer. So here we're even educating into different types of developers. There's master developers who are a different type of developer who have to not only build the apartment block, but they have to build the whole, they have to build the roads. They're in charge to make sure that the trees are in the area, right? So that's a master developer, but a plot developer can just buy a plot and build a thing and usually sell it off piece by piece. So we're all educated in different ways. And if you're a brilliant real estate broker here, or a brilliant master developer, a brilliant developer, or if you have an app that serves the property market here, it's completely different to Egypt, for example, are all these different places. So I think it's a very nuanced thing. And that's why, you know, when we did the Smashy Business Dubai Works podcast on this for, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, we always ask these questions. And when people, I would always ask them at the end, do you think the Middle East is an emerging market? Will it emerge? And what's your outlook? And then they always say which market they like going to next, whether Dubai or Abu Dhabi or you know, whether the UAE and then into Saudi or elsewhere. Everyone who already set up a business is usually aspirational, ambitious, and they want to go somewhere else. But it's not always the case that it's possible. It's not always the case that the idea that they had might be unique to Dubai. And not only the case that market entry is hard. In Saudi, there's completely different setups on apps, on numbers and regulation, everything, language, many other things. So that's the kind of thing that is about doing business differently elsewhere. Unfortunately, you know, we often talk about it on this show, the Egypt economy at the moment with currency is difficult, but Egypt's a country of over 100 million people, so 10 times more than UAE.
But I have a question regarding that because, like, you know, Augustus Media has love in Cairo, love in Dubai, love in Saudi, love in Doha. So when you hear, like, the news of, like, hey, the economy in the UAE is one of the best and it's growing right now, or the economy in Egypt is not the best right now and it's really not doing well, do you, as a businessman, does it affect love in, let's say, like Dubai or like love in Cairo?
Yeah, absolutely it does. I mean, you know, we're in these markets as Augustus Moss or Augustus Saudia. We're in these markets to have viable businesses in those markets. They're not kitchens, they're not back offices, but they're at different stages of development. It took, you know, 5 or 6 years of dedicated focus here to get this going. And it takes that time there as well. We have synergies, we have benefits for having multiple locations, but there's also resource stretched and, you know, stretching your investments in different places. But it goes back to what do we want to achieve at Gustus Media? We want to be the modern media company of choice in the Middle East and North Africa. So those audiences are always our target. And the best way to reach those audiences are being there and creating content locally for those audiences. So we just have to navigate those things. And whether it is macroeconomic factors or even micro, the things that are out of our control, or whether it's the business fit. Even if the economy is good, is our offering, does Love in Dubai plug and play into these places? Not necessarily. And then what other offerings can you have in these markets to create a viable business? And how do you build relationships with different stakeholders in different countries and things like that? So, it's a challenge, it's a puzzle. I think we often hear of success stories of branches opening elsewhere, of startups expanding into new markets, and hopefully we'll cover them. Swvl is one of those, if we kind of jump into that story. But Swvl, history of Swvl, you'll see a lot of it. There's videos on the Smashy TV website if you type in Swvl or on YouTube. But Swvl, the history of Swvl is they started less than a decade ago. Egypt is a huge country, as we alluded to, the population. And transport, public transport is an issue, and so is cost, right? So they're still building the tram in Cairo, but outside of, people commute into Cairo, right? And what Swvl did was, the idea in Lebanon of services, if that's how you call them, yeah. Like where you jump into a car and there's already someone in it.
Yes.
So it's kind of like Uber Bus, and Uber and Careem did launch their bus services in Egypt over the years. But Swvl had got there before them, and they had local market advantage. So it's basically it's a bus service on an app that's a shared service, and they did really well, really quickly, and they listed in a SPAC on the Nasdaq, and it failed, and they got into trouble, financially challenging. But they also did a dual listing on the DFM, Dubai Financial Market, and now they have a turnaround story, and they're on the way back, and we've documented that. So, but this. This announcement is they signed a contract
with Etisalat. Yes, with Etisalat, and it's, by the way, as well, for like $6.3 million. So how do you think that Swvl and Etisalat's contracts together are correlating with Swvl's services?
Yeah, so it's brilliant, right? Like, so Etisalat and are listed, and they've got two different divisions. We know them as Emirates Telecom. We know them for their telco services, but they've invested in lots of different tech startups, El Grocer, Starsplay, many others, and Swvl Global Tech Company. I'm reading the Smashy Business story here, but it's for bus and van rides for people who can't access or afford private transportation. So a single Uber might be more expensive. Customers can book a ride friendly on its user-friendly app. The collaboration is basically daily commutes with advanced tech bus services. So Swvl and a telco operator, so E&, are in Egypt, Etisalat are in Egypt as well. Obviously, they're based at Abu Dhabi. And it's just, probably allowing that sort of data and ability to book the apps and use the Etisalat telco service for this as well. So they were the first Egyptian startup on the Nasdaq. They had challenges, as I mentioned, the share price dropped, but now it's profitable. And the Swvl's former CFO, Youssef Salem, stated they wanted to get back to its
2021.
Yeah. It needs to be a big bet on a large market that can truly move the needle. And this is what's interesting about Egypt for these companies. We know of Bolt as another Uber, and Bolt are known as the emerging markets Uber, one to keep an eye on. They're from Estonia or Latvia, I think. Definitely one of those sort of Baltic post-Soviet bloc nations. And they're expanding into other parts of Africa and emerging markets as well. So it's good that Swvl are doubling down on where they started and making it work.
That's true, because as well, and why the CEO wants it to get back to 2021, because in 2021, it has raised a $445 million IPO.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder what is their IPO is at right now.
Yeah, their market cap, and now we can get that. So it's exciting. It also shows, again, going back to navigating countries, that companies like Etisalat and telcos who are present in many countries, like Zain is another telco that's present in many countries, that they have to make decisions and partnerships in these areas. But it would be interesting to see. So you've got two Swvls. You've got Swvl, market cap is $54 million. On the Nasdaq, and then the holding company is there as well. So year to date, they're up 320% on the stock market year to date. That's from January, 6 months, which is excellent. 300% year to date, and 1 year, 443%. So they've really sort of turned it around, but they're still, their share price, as you mentioned, was $255 per share when they listed, and it's down to less than $7 per share now.
Well, I want to jump to another story that I think honestly would interest you, because remember how we talked about esports, esports coming to Riyadh in July to August, from like mid-July to August.
Yes.
Well, Riyadh will be building the world's tallest sports tower. And all I can think of is that is so cool, because they will host as well the esports. So as I said, Riyadh is going to be hosting the world's tallest sports tower, and it is going to be for $23 billion. This project is such a big project, and it's launched by the Saudi King Salman in 2019. He wanted to expand the green areas in the capital, including the world's largest city park.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing here. Obviously, the tower is the latest announcement, is getting the headline, but what people really should be following is the Sports Boulevard development, which you alluded to. The global sports tower will stand 130 meters tall, 83,000 square meters, 30 different sports facilities. But really, it's the Riyadh Sports Boulevard that's... I'm going to read out some facts about it, but don't underestimate what they're doing with the sports boulevard in Riyadh. So Riyadh's obviously a big city, 8-9 million people. It's fairly flat compared with Dubai. They've had success with Riyadh Boulevard, Riyadh World, which is more entertainment. And now within the city, they're building, I'll read out the stats, but it's basically a long inner city, how would I describe it, park.
Yes.
So it's not a very green city yet, but they're building this. I think it's 130 kilometers.
It's 135 kilometers.
Yeah.
But that makes me like wonder, will it actually be, I would say, trying to be the next Dubai? Because it did mention that it wants to be the next Dubai and the next Abu Dhabi.
I think they all, I don't think Riyadh specifically mentioned next Dubai. I think MBS said he wants to be the new Europe, but I think they all, make announcements. And the Sports Boulevard sort of looks similar to what was announced for the E11 in Dubai recently, that sort of green. It's urban planning, right? And it's a linear park. It's, Neom is also linear rather than it's a straight line. It's got districts, it's a green initiative, it's going to plant 170,000 trees. If you drive through Riyadh at the moment, you see banners and hoardings for the boulevards. Like, I'm running around sort of the north east of Riyadh, where our office is, and the tram is nearly working. And then underneath the tram, you have these hoardings, like you see of developments in Dubai, saying, here's the canoe part, here's the horse riding part, here's the football pitch. And it's all like, it's all coming. But they can't really see it, because it's not one part, because it's the whole way through the city. So whereas Riyadh Boulevard is one area, but the boulevard, Sports Boulevard, is through the city. So they're also building the new Maraba, which is northwest of the city, which is like a downtown sort of square object. But like through the city, they're going to build a boulevard, which is sporty, which is unbelievable, really.
Do you think that Riyadh would be the hub for athletes? We know that Al Nassr has now Cristiano Ronaldo, and you never know, Messi might be soon to join Riyadh. But do you think that Riyadh would be the hub for athletes?
I think the Messi deal sort of didn't happen, and I think he probably will retire now after Miami. He's in the final of the Copa America. But it's a good question. Like, I wonder, is that important to these cities to become the hub for athletes? Like, we have the Olympics, and your question is pointed for that. We have the Olympics coming up. I think their strategy, the Saudi Games strategy that they've had, that they've run the Saudi Games for a couple of years now, has big incentives to local athletes. And I think what they really want to do is grow their local players and sports. Where do they attract people of all levels is fine. We already know that Dubai does really well at bringing in teams to do their trainings and academies here. So there's a lot of stuff happening on that level. But yeah, like we have King Salman Park being built here, we have Riyadh Park. It's livability. Saudi have a whole, as part of Vision 2030, they have a whole QOL, quality of life initiative. And I think if you want to attract Program HQ, if you want to attract C-suite investors and their families and everyone for livability, you kind of need parks, right? You need sports and you need facilities. So, you know, when I run around Riyadh now, I'm running on the streets and it is a bit smoggy. It is a bit difficult. But if I've got Riyadh Boulevard, inshallah, in 5-10 years' time, I'm running through a park and it's nicer. So I think that's what they're really at.
As well, I have noticed that they are having like a lot of greenery areas. As you mentioned, like earlier, with the E311, I would say like possible, hopefully it happens, makeover, and with the Riyadh Sports Boulevard, it just shows me that they are trying to implement a lot of like greenery areas and maybe allowing it to be easier and better for us athletes and
Absolutely. Like the environmental sustainability is important, and here there are 4.4 million square meters of green spaces, 170,000 trees, as we mentioned. There are 2030 environmental goals that they're hitting at here as well. But it's, as we mentioned, urban development, transforming the landscape of the city, economic diversification, the projects there for the private sector. You know, I was talking to a friend in Ireland who's pitching for a bid for a production on this business for this initiative. So there's a lot of, it will stimulate the private sector. People will build cafes along it. You know, if you think of what, if you know New York, there's the High Line, which was an old train tracks that they turned into an urban development. Mm-hmm. And, you know, London has many parts to it. Like the canal in London, sort of all around Camden, all around down there, there's a lot of developments around those areas and projects, and obviously along the Thames. So Riyadh doesn't have a city going through it, and Dubai built the canal. What Riyadh is building is a sports boulevard. So you will see a lot of that. You'll see sports and entertainment, tourism and entertainment. You'll see cultural and social development around all this as well. And yeah, they want to, by hosting the world-class facilities like Global Sports Tower, it helps Riyadh position as a global city. So I love hearing these announcements. It's economic, but it's also good for livability.
I agree with you, you know, because like we have had a very wrong idea on Saudi Arabia and Riyadh and how living in Riyadh would be like. However, they're trying to change, I would say, the idea that was, I would say, implemented in people's heads through these projects, which would, by the way, sort of boost the economy, and it's very exciting.
I hear you. Like, you know, when MBS was asked about, what do you think of sports washing? He said, sports contributes, last year contributed X percent to my total GDP, this year contributes X. So he doesn't see it as, like genuinely, this is what the Western world doesn't understand. Saudi isn't a foreign project. Saudi is a domestic project, right? And what they're trying to do, just like His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid here, for his residents, for his citizens, for his nationals, and also for people who choose to spend their life here, he wants them to have a good life. And I think that's what they're at in Riyadh and Saudi as well. Like, sure, many people have a nice life as well, but they're enhancing it. And they're making this a global capital city out of the desert, basically. And, so if one or two people change their perception, great. But there's already 35 million people who want to have a better life, who are embracing the changes. And I think it's really for them, as opposed to changing perception of people who, sometimes, Farah, you can't change people's perceptions. You know, sometimes people are going to be fixed in their ways and let them be.
That's deep. That is actually very deep. Well, this brings us to the end of our show. And thank you so much for everyone who tuned in. And of course, we will see you again next week.
And absolutely. And for more of the fastest growing economies in the UAE, check out Smashy Business social media and our lovely newsletter, which hits your inbox every morning. See you on Monday.